AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Biggest and the very best. Friday nights, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hello, folks. Alyssa Walker-Campbell along with you for the next 2 hours at SB Nation. And once again, we have an incredible lineup. Lots to get into. We are fired up about the big game tonight right here in Houston. The Warriors, the Rockets, 8 o'clock tip. So we'll be talking some NBA playoffs. Also, PGA news and notes. We're going to highlight a number of subjects. Of course, Tiger Woods receives the Presidential Medal of Freedom honor. We'll talk about that. Also, Max Homa's big win at the Wells Fargo Championship last weekend. And the Byron Nelson. It's underway up in Dallas. My sidekick tonight, hanging out with the Big E, as always, the producer of the Big E Sports Show. And that is Bobby Harris. Good evening, Bobby.
Good evening. Good evening.
Okay, I know you're fired up. You got a smile on your face about the Rockets tonight. Can they take care of business? I mean, how did the Warriors, how did they beat the Rockets without KD?
It's just when Steph Curry gets hot, he is hot. Like, he is back in that form in the Oracle Arena. That's really how they beat him. I mean, Steph Curry hit some great shots down the stretch of the game.
Well, you know, KD has played so fantastic in the postseason and during the playoffs. But let's not forget, you know what? The Warriors, they won a couple of titles without KD, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. People seem to forget that. And Andre Iguodala was the main piece of that team. So this will be a test for the Warriors going into Toyota Center tonight.
Absolutely. It's going to be live. It's going to be happening. I mean, Rocket fans, they are fired up. But I have to wonder, too, and we're going to talk about this on the show tonight. You know, the Rockets, they really could have capitalized on that opportunity that they had, you know, with KD being out with that injury and losing game five.
Yeah, they do. And it's just the Rockets offense. You got to stop settling for the 3-point shots. Drive in the lane and draw some fouls. Get to the free throw line. It's just, I guess it's just the formula of the guys of the Rockets. That's just how they play. So without KD, they can do some major things in the inside of paint, drive to the basket, make something happen. And, you know, hey, let's get the victory.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in order to get that victory, James Harden, he's going to have to step up, you know, down the stretch because he only had one field goal with, 9 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. He's got to stroke it. He's got to make something happen, right?
Yeah, he does. And being in Toyota Center, he feels that fuel, that fire. He knows it's game time. He knows it's win or go home.
That's right. It is game time. The Big E Sports Show rolling right along. SB Nation Radio. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and we will be right back in Hour 1.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. The Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And many different ways to connect with us. All of our Twitter enthusiasts, you can join us at eRadio Sports. You can email the show info@eradiosports.com and go back and listen to all of our amazing interviews at podcastarena.com. Of course, quote, buy, and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer. Only at Progressive, Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. Well, right now, yep, we opened up with some NBA talk, but right now we're going to shift gears. We're going to go around the horn. We're going to talk some baseball, specifically the Yankees. In fact, they're on the road tonight, Tampa Bay Rays. That game is currently underway. They are, 21-15, and we are so delighted to open up the mic and welcome in a gentleman who has actually, he's been on our program many times in the past, award-winning sports writer with the New York Times, the author on several books, Billy Martin, On Par, The Heisman, and now his latest release, Chumps to Champs, How the Worst Team teams in Yankees history led to the 90s dynasty. It is a fascinating read and a true honor to have back with us Mr. Bill Pennington. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on. Nice to talk with you again.
Absolutely. It's a true pleasure to have you back with us. And let's start off, you know, before we start talking about your brand new book, get us up to speed on the Yankees so far this season. How has the season played out, and what have we learned?
Well, it's remarkable that they've been able to bridge all these injuries they've had. I mean, at one point they had what would have been the entire starting lineup on opening day on the injured list. So, in some ways they've recalled guys from the minors. They've made some wise free agent signings, and they've cobbled it together. They had a rough patch, but lately they've been going pretty strong. I mean, they're pitching is still a little suspect, especially the starting pitching. With Severino, their ace, out, but they're finding other ways. And it's helped that they've played some easier teams here and there, although now they're facing the Rays. We'll see what happens. It's been a little surprising that they're playing as well as they are, to tell you the truth.
Well, so can you kind of give us the pulse in terms of when will the Yankees lineup return to full strength, and how close are they returning to full form?
Well, it's not clear. I mean, some of those guys are not going to be back for a while. It doesn't sound like Severino's going to be back until late July. Aaron Judge may not be back until roughly around the same. They did get Gary Sanchez, the catcher, back, which has been a big boost. He's hit a few home runs right away. Stanton, it's not clear when he's going to come back. He started out with one injury and now seems to have another one. Started out with his belt bicep, and now he's got another problem in that arm. It's a little, you almost got to wonder what's in the water there or something.
Uh-huh.
there's a lot going wrong. I don't know that they will be back all that soon. Maybe, you know, All-Star break, the center fielder Hicks should be back before that. So it could be a little while. I mean, if the Red Sox had the kind of start this year that they did last year, the Yankees would be in deep trouble already. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, Aaron Hicks, he's been out since March, but I had read online that there was the possibility that he could rejoin the team this weekend. Is that true?
Yeah, it appears that may be true. He's certainly been ready. I think a little bit has to do with some of his rehab work and probably get a minor league stint as well. But that would be a boost. I mean, if they get everybody back, some of these replacements have been playing so well. In New York, there's talk about, well, what are they going to do when all these guys come back?
Right,
good problem to have, but still, and a lot of them would qualify as DHs. You can only have one of those per game, so that could add to the logjam at that position.
Hey, award-winning sports writer with the New York Times, author, prolific author, Bill Pennington, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to post a picture of his book online at our Twitter feed. It is titled Chumps to Champs, How the Worst Teams in Yankees History Led to the 90s Dynasty. And I promise we're going to take a deep dive into that here in just a moment. But tell me this, Bill, I mean, coming into the 2019 season, what were your expectations for the Yankees?
I thought they would be about where they are right now, or maybe a little better. Early on, they played Baltimore a lot and Detroit, and I think most people thought that there was going to be a real fast start. I mean, you know, this being New York, people probably got ahead of themselves a little bit. I mean, people were saying, oh, they might win 10 of their first 11 games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's pretty rare in baseball history, and nothing like that happened. So they stumbled out of the gate a little bit, but I think... I think most of us thought that Severino and others would help guide them along, but then he got hurt in spring training too. So I think expectations were high, but they were obviously tempered by this rash of injuries. And but again, I think Brian Cashman, their GM, has made some good moves. The rest of the division doesn't seem to be running away from them. They're certainly within sight of the Rays now. I just think that they're not necessarily the powerhouse that everybody thought they would be. I mean, Aaron Judge was starting to come along, and then he got hurt. So I think fans here are sort of appreciative that they're not farther back. It's just been that kind of year. I mean, other teams elsewhere are winning a lot of games. In the AL East, at least, you can get away with winning slightly over 60% of your games right now.
A conversation with Bill Pennington tonight, SB Nation Radio. We're going to cross over and highlight his new book titled Chumps to Champs. And I have to tell you, I mean, Bill, listen, I have done so many books on the Yankees throughout the years. So you have to kind of tell us, you know, what makes this one different? What makes this one special?
Well, this one is different because it's maybe the only Yankee book I've read that talks about failure.
Okay.
It focuses on what times when, or at least begins on the times when the Yankees were a really bad team, the worst teams in the history of the franchise, which is 1989 to 1992. Those are the first, that's a four-year period. They lost more games in that four-year period than in any other four-year period going back to 1913 when the Yankees franchise became known as the Yankees. So this is also a period where everything was going wrong. The owner was permanent. George Steinbrenner was permanently suspended from baseball. They had the worst record in baseball. They were really kind of a laughing stock, and that's not too strong of a word. Attendance was down. TV ratings were down. They had everything was going wrong. The karma was bad. They had a pitcher, Andy Hawkins, throw a no-hitter, an eight-inning complete game no-hitter, and lose the game. That had never happened in Major League Baseball before. So people forget that there were some hard times there. And what's interesting is that this story has a twist. Behind the scenes, they actually were rebuilding the franchise in a remarkable way, and it led to the Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit, Ernie Williams, the Yankees, who won four out of the five World Series towards the end of the century. So it's really, an unforeseen resurrection, and that's the story I wanted to tell.
Well, tell us about as far as who you were able to secure and get interviews. Did you have any problem getting people to talk about, some of those hard, tough years that they had to muscle through?
Not really. One of the benefits of doing this kind of historical nonfiction is that when you go back 20 or 25 years, people have different perspectives. A lot of them are in retirement or semi-retirement, and they view the whole thing differently. They tell stories maybe a little more fully than they would have at the time when they're right in the heat of the battle. And so I didn't have any resistance. It was, the main architect, it was the GM at Gene Michael, the Yankees, who had been named GM right in 1990, right as George Steinbrenner was suspended from baseball for consorting with a gambler. That was one of the last things Steinbrenner did was name Gene Michael. So he was a key guy to talk with, and I had several sit-downs with him. I had known him since the 1980s. And then the manager, Buck Showalter, was a key figure who's gone on to manage in other places, but that was his first big league job. He got that in 1992. And he's a key figure, and all their scouting people are all still around, and it was fun to sort of piece it all together. And then the players, whether it's Paul O'Neill or Don Mattingly, they're people that I knew and could easily get to. So it was kind of fun putting it all together. It's a little bit like a scavenger hunt, trying to get everybody and piece the story together. But, you did sort of come across a lot of new details. If you spend a couple of years just asking about this one period, you uncover new things.
A fascinating read on the fall and rise of the Yankees. Bill Pennington has been with us. Chumps to Champs, How the Worst Teams in Yankees History Led to the 90s Dynasty. And we have got to have you back. We just flat ran out of time. We'd love to have you back and take a deeper dive into the book. Thank you so much, Bill.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way here in Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Looking forward to our next segment, some NFL news and notes. But at O'Reilly Auto Parts, you are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest price. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Well, yep, that's right. We're going to talk some NFL news and notes. We're going to recap the 2019 NFL draft in our next segment. A true pleasure to have back with us from The Athletic. That is Christian Dyer. Give him a follow on Twitter, Christian at Christian R. Dyer. And Christian, last time you were on the show, you and your lovely wife, Sophia, had just welcomed your baby boy. How's little man doing?
Little man's doing well. Not so little anymore. 4 months, he's up to 15 and a half pounds.
Oh,
so,
wow. Okay.
You know, we're starting to get back pain every time we lift him up. But he's doing well. He's almost sleeping through the nights. And I'll tell you what, when he watched the Super Bowl a couple months ago, he could not get his eyes off the screen. So we might have a future John Madden on our hands.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, what is his thoughts on the Giants and their decision to take in the first round? And as the sixth pick, Daniel Jones from Duke. I mean, who knew? We need to be watching Duke football, right?
Well, I'm not sure little Timothy, that's my son's name,
right,
quite as much crying as Giants fans did after the draft, or soiling of their pants either, I guess. I think there was a lot of confusion about this pick. And, you know, just to kind of lay the groundwork here, the Giants came into the draft sitting with two first-round picks. They were the only one or two teams with multiple picks coming into the draft. The Oakland Raiders, soon to be Las Vegas Raiders, were the other ones. And, you know, at number 6 and number 17, I think the consensus was that the Giants, if they went the quarterback route, it'd probably be Dwayne Haskins, the Ohio State quarterback, who ended up going to Washington in the middle part of the first round. And the way the draft board unfolded was predictable in some regards, but Josh Allen, the Kentucky defensive end, who was someone we talked about when I was on the show last time, won the Chuck Bednarik Award from the Maxwell Football Club as the nation's top defensive player, absolutely dominant edge rusher, high character guy from North Jersey, so right in the Giants' backyard, grew up watching the Giants and Jets, even though he was a Steelers fan, a Giants team that was looking for an edge rusher. No Olivier Vernon, no Jason Pierre-Paul. He was sent away a couple years ago, ended up passing on him. I think that was the big surprise, because Allen was a consensus top 3, top 4 pick on most people's draft boards. The Giants needed an edge rusher, and instead they went for a quarterback that a lot of people think was a bit of a reach, Alyssa.
Hey, Christian Dyer with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. You can check out many of his posts on The Athletic. Okay, so right now we're talking about the Giants, their selection of the 6th pick, Daniel Jones, in the first round from Duke, a smart quarterback. How surprised were you that they selected him over Dwayne Haskins, because he was available?
Yeah, I think Daniel Jones is probably the safer pick out of the two. Haskins, not the most mobile of quarterbacks. There's questions about his experience. He's a one-year starter. Daniel Jones was a three-year starter at Duke. Haskins played on a team with a lot of talent. Daniel Jones played on a team who last year dropped his passes 38 times. So I think that there's a lot of things there that you like about Daniel Jones when you look at the end of the day, that his combine showing was very strong. His private workouts were very strong. His pro day was very strong. He was a guy that the Giants brought in specifically for one of the 30 workouts, which is, you know, the 30 players they can kind of bring in before the draft who aren't local. And those are kind of coveted spots. The Giants like the fact that, you know, his head coach worked with the Mannings. Daniel Jones is someone who's been around the Mannings, both Eli Payton and Archie, having gone to the Manning Passing Academy. So there's a lot of things that you kind of looked and said, I think the Giants could have interest in Daniel Jones. The fact that they got him at 6 when Jones was thought to be kind of a mid-first-round pick, I think that's where the surprise is, Alyssa. And it's not an indictment on Daniel Jones. He's a clear first-round pick. He's a top half of the draft first-round pick. But he's certainly not somebody who people thought was going to be taken at number 6. So there was surprise. I think you have to think that General Manager Dave Gettleman and Head Coach Pat Schumer thought that this guy was too good and too perfect to be true, so they were willing to reach for him, especially with other targets such as Josh Allen still on the board.
Okay, so there's been a lot of criticism in regards to this pick, but, you know, listening to you, Christian, I mean, what's your belief? I mean, is this potentially just a guy that's, you know, flown a little bit under the radar? He could be a dark horse kind of guy, and that he could ultimately be that franchise quarterback?
Yeah, you know, I'm the wrong person to ask about that, so I ask people who know more than I do. I asked Mike Tannenbaum, who's former Jets general manager and vice president of the Dolphins, and Jeff Diamond, who was a former general manager of the Vikings and team president of the Titans. I asked them the same question. They both said that, you know, if you like the guy, you take him, and you don't care what mock drafts say, you don't care what other teams' draft boards say, you find someone who you think is a good fit. And, you know, the Giants are in a position where they've got who they believe is the top quarterback on their draft board. Kyler Murray was already taken at that point, and they can let this kid sit for 1 year, maybe two, behind Eli Manning. Eli's contract is up at the end of this year, but they could certainly restructure and add on another year. They can let Daniel Jones sit there and develop. I like him. He doesn't have the strongest best of arms, but he played against good competition for a rather mediocre team. He led Duke, which isn't exactly a hotbed of football in the ACC. He led them to consecutive bowl game wins. So I think there's a lot of positives there. People rave about his leadership. People rave about the fact that he makes smart throws. Mm-hmm. And again, I mentioned those 38 drops mm-hmm. that they had the senior here. If they complete half those passes, you know, he's around 60, 61, 62% completion percentage, which is a good, solid number. And perhaps most intriguing for me as a sports writer, Alyssa, we may have Daniel Jones's quarterback of the New York Giants and Zion Williamson playing for the New York Knicks, both Duke graduates, and within the next 6 months.
Interesting. Hey, Christian Dyer with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Does he have the ability, Daniel Jones, does he have the ability to start day one over longtime franchise quarterback Eli Manning?
I think even if he has the ability, the Giants aren't going to do that. They won't do that to Eli Manning necessarily. And I don't think they'll do that to Daniel Jones because it would be an awful lot of pressure. I mean, Eli is someone who I know is a little bit of a lightning rod. He's a lightning rod here in New York. He's a lightning rod nationally. Is he elite? Is he a Hall of Fame quarterback? This is a guy with four Pro Bowl appearances, two Super Bowl MVP titles, two Super Bowl championships. He's a good, solid quarterback, and he's going to go down as probably the best quarterback in Giants franchise history, no doubt about it. I think to make Daniel Jones the week one starter over Eli Manning in a quarterback competition, even if Jones is the better quarterback in training camp, which I don't think he will be. Eli's coming off a year where his touchdown to interception ratio numbers on par with his career. His completion percentage was actually higher than his career average. You know, he's hovering kind of around that 4,000 yards, passing yards over the past couple seasons, rather consistently. So I don't think Eli is necessarily on a steep decline. And I don't think you could put Daniel Jones in a position where, A, there's going to be unreasonable expectations, but B, you're always going to have that shot of Eli Manning on TV waiting on the sidelines to go into a game once Jones falters. The plan will be to slow play Jones. Injuries and everything else can kind of change that, certainly. But I think at the end of the day, Daniel Jones probably won't see the field as a starter until the Giants are out of playoff contention.
You know, you just have to wonder how much scrutiny the rookie quarterback will be under, how much pressure will he face. And I have to ask you, I mean, Christian, you know, what is your forecast, kind of the outlook for the 2019 season, going forward?
Well, I think you look at the fact the last time an organization in New York took a quarterback number six overall, it was Mark Sanchez. And he was somebody who was rookie year, took his team to the playoffs, and then after that, AFC championship game twice in his first 2 years. And then the media really got to him, and his career now is holding a clipboard for whatever NFL team ends up signing him. There is a lot of scrutiny. You're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head there. Mm-hmm. The idea is going to be, I think, to let him develop and grow into this situation. And the Giants have a very soft schedule this year, so I'm not sure there's going to be a rush necessarily to get him on the field. They're a team in transition. They got that second pick in the first round because they moved Odell Beckham Jr. I think the locker room's going to be better for it. I don't think necessarily that this is a team that's going to be a playoff team, but I think they could be playing some meaningful football in November and December. And, 7-9, 8-8 is not out of the question, which may let them slow play Daniel Jones. And kind of like Pat Mahomes 2 years ago in Kansas City, Mahomes made his NFL debut as a starter week 17, and then that set him up for what wasn't a bad year last year in Kansas City, to say the least. I think Daniel Jones will probably have a very similar trajectory if possible.
You know, Christian, I thought you were going to say, hey, the Giants, they're in. They're going to make the playoffs in 2019, right?
There's a lot of upheaval. Damon Harrison, who's their nose tackle, probably one of the best three interior defensive linemen in the league and doesn't get the credit for it. They traded him away mid-year. Mm-hmm. Landon Collins was not retained, and he's a Pro Bowl safety. They lost him. The loss of Odell Beckham Jr. certainly hurts on the field, if only for the attention he draws from the secondary that can free up others. The offensive line is still a work in transition. So there's a lot of things that the Giants have done well. They address some real needs in the first round with their other picks. But at the end of the day, I think this is still very much a work in progress. And 6, 7, 8 wins, probably the ceiling for this team.
Okay, just about another minute with Christian Dyer tonight. The Athletic, check him out online. Give him a follow at Twitter, Christian R. Dyer. Okay, talk to me quickly about the Jets. Grade what picks and the movement that's taken place in the offseason. offseason?
Yeah, the Jets draft, I think, has to be kind of a combined grade with last year. If you keep in mind, they moved up in the draft to get Sam Darnold, a quarterback who seems like they finally have a quarterback of the future since waiting for one, since Joe Namath. They did address a big need with Quinnen Williams, who's going to be their interior defensive lineman in a 3-4 first-round pick, probably one of the top players in the draft when you talk about just absolute raw talent, his ability, his ceiling. He's an all-pro, Pro Bowl, perennial kind of guy, I think, year in, year out for this team. So they got better. They got better in free agency. They still need a kind of a wide receiver, a playmaker on the outside. There's going to be some talent. They've got a lot of room in the salary cap. I think the Jets take a massive step forward this year, probably to 8 to 9 wins. They'll be knocking on the door if they get CDs. And then if they do well in free agency next year, Alyssa, I think that they may finally be ready to dethrone the Patriots top of the division. They're about a year and a half away from being serious contenders.
Hey, good stuff. NFL news and notes. Jets, Giants with our friend Christian Dyer, sports writer with The Athletic. Give him a follow at Twitter at Christian R. Dyer. Christian, true pleasure. Enjoy the weekend, and we will talk again real soon. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you.
Of course, much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you're with us on this Friday night. Thank you for carving out some time. It is time to hit them long and hit them straight. And you know what that means. It is time for our PGA news and notes. The PGA Tour, it is actually in Dallas this weekend. So let's go inside the ropes. Let's visit with former PGA Tour player and author who joins us each and every week. Check out his website right now. Log on LarryMillerGolf.com. Good evening, Dr. Miller. How are you?
Oh, good evening. I hope that weather's done with you there in Houston.
Oh, yeah. It's been brutal this week, and hopefully it will pass through. We are ready for some good weather so we can go out and play some good golf. But listen, before we break down and talk about the Byron Nelson Tournament here in Texas this week, let's take a look back, Larry, at the Wells Fargo Championship, and how about Max Homa's big win, another first-time winner. Many times you share about that on our show, and it's just such an inspiring story that he never gave up, and he's standing in the winner's circle for the very first time. You just got to believe, like Tug McGraw would always say, right? You got to believe.
Well, it's yet another testament to how deep the talent is on the PGA Tour. I mean, it seems like every other week we're getting a first-time winner, and it's getting to the point where it's impossible to pick a favorite. You know, we keep leaning on McIlroy and DJ and Justin Thomas and these guys, but you know what? They're not winning. I mean, every other week there's a new winner. And so trying to pick a favorite in a PGA Tour event is really, really difficult. And I'll tell you what it really boils down to is the winner, the favorite, is the guy who at the end of the week makes the most putts from 10 feet and under. And that's who wins the golf tournament. So that's why I always preach to the young people I work with, you know, if you want to be a great player, get great at 10 feet and under. Get really great at that. And if you do that, you're going to be a great player. Because they all hit the ball pretty well. They all hit a lot of greens in regulation. And it boils down to not missing those putts when you get it inside that distance. That's the secret. And so Max Homa taught that last week. You know, that's what he did. He made all the putts, especially down the stretch on those par saves he made on on three of the last five holes. And I don't know. I've never met Max Homa, but he must be quite a guy because every player I've heard is just ecstatic that he won. He must be a real favorite out there. And a real, real nice guy. So anyway, hats off to him, and let's see what he does going forward. Hopefully he'll keep it going.
Hey, we are inside the ropes with Larry Miller tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are celebrating Max Homa's, his big win last weekend. And, you know, Larry, I was going to ask you, my follow-up question was going to be, how did he deliver on the game's biggest stage? And you're talking about he was draining clutch putts. But also, just I thought he demonstrated some serious intestinal fortitude because, you know, play had been suspended many times throughout that tournament because of lightning in the area, the heavy rains, and he continued to make clutch putts, and he made winning plays.
Yeah, the perseverance is a big thing out there, you know, and talking about him, you know, believing in himself and sticking it out and being able to persevere through adversity, through downtimes, is one of the keys to developing and getting better out there. There's a lot of talent. A lot of guys give up too soon, you know, they don't have success quickly enough in their minds, and they end up fading away. But he persevered. Now, of course, in order to be able to persevere, you have to have things going your way. You know, you have to have the wherewithal to stay out there for that length of time and endure. You know, they said he won 18,000 one year.
Yeah.
You know, and so he had to have some pretty good backers and support to be able to even stay. But that's one aspect of perseverance, is the wherewithal to be able to stay and stick it out. But the other part of it is as you said, the intestinal fortitude to do it. And he had all the pieces in place, and certainly got the talent. And he didn't miss any putts coming in inside 10 feet, whereas if you look at McIlroy, he missed a bunch. And there's the difference in winning and losing a golf tournament. And so, you know, in fact, you listeners out there, you want to cut shots off your game,
mm-hmm.
get really good at 10 feet and under and see what happens. It's one of the keys to winning golf.
Well, Wells Fargo Championship, it was a game changer for Max Homa. He's only 28. You're talking about what he cashed two checks for $18,000 as far as some of his winnings, but he just cashed in big time, $1.42 million. And that's good news because you know what? It's not about the money. He's got some job security now, Larry, and perhaps in my mind, that's his biggest perk.
Yep, job security, exempt for 2 years, into the Masters, the PGA, all mm-hmm. sorts of stuff, not to mention the endorsements that are going to come his way, especially with his good personality.
Uh-huh.
He's a very likable guy, so he's going to get a lot of offers, and if he keeps playing well, that win is going to change his life. It already has, but it's going to do so even more.
Absolutely. Hey, Larry Miller, life member of the PGA of America, former PGA Tour player and author of 4 books on golf and performance, and he has taught golf for many, many years, gives some great advice. That's why we want him on each and every week. And, you know, we're talking about Max Homa, what an inspirational golfer, inspirational story, but I think one of the most inspirational stories that we've got to shine the spotlight on is Tiger Woods. And he was just awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom honor from President Trump, the highest civilian honor, an extraordinary athlete who has introduced and inspired so many to the game of golf. I wanted you to definitely weigh in on this honor and just your reaction, Larry.
Well, you know, first of all, in regard to that medal and the honor, a lot of people would say, well, you know, why is he getting that medal? But, you know, if you look at the criteria for that medal, aside from the beginning parts of it and what they are, it goes down to talk about excellence and inspiration in public and endeavors and also contributions to that. And so Arnold Palmer got the award, Jack Nicklaus got it, Charlie Sifford got it, and they got it. They all got it because of their contributions to the game of golf and to excellence in a sport. And that's one of the reasons Tiger Woods got it. He also got it, I think, in Trump's estimation, for his ability to come back from such adversity. And I've always said that if Tiger Woods is authentic about his transformation, then you know, then he deserves everything he's going to get. You know, people do stupid things, and but if you have remorse for stupid things you've done and you dedicate yourself to changing and making sure that doesn't happen again, then you know what? Then that's very honorable. And so I'm all for Tiger Woods, and then winning the Masters is just kind of the cherry on top of it. Back on his game now, and boy, it's just so important for the game of golf. It's going to do so much. And as I said, I believe that his transformation is authentic. You can kind of tell the way he's acting, and
mm-hmm.
and if that's the case, you know, if he stays healthy, then Jack Nicklaus, as he said, he's shaking in his boots, and you know, Woods has a great chance to catch him in that major category.
Tiger Woods, so many incredible achievements. One thing, you know, I'm not sure we've ever discussed this, Larry, but why do you think the needle moves, you know, when we talk, you know, so much when we talk about Tiger Woods? Why do people gravitate towards him so much and in such awe of him?
Well, you know, for one thing, his immense talent, which is way beyond anybody else out there. It really is. I mean, when you combine all facets of the game of golf, including thinking, he's so much better than anybody else. I mean, after all, he's got 81 tour wins. You know, that's incredible. But I think the other thing is that, you know, it's like a Shakespearean play, you know, his life and his career.
Okay.
I mean, you've got comedy, you've got tragedy, you've got ecstasy. You know, it's all wrapped into one, his career and his life. And people love that. They love a good play. You know, they love a good story. And Tiger Woods is certainly a good story. And then throw on top of that his incredible talent. And it's just an intriguing thing to watch and keep track of. And I dare say most people, in spite of how much Jack Nicklaus was loved, I think most people are pulling for him to draw even and maybe even pass Nicklaus with majors. So we'll see what happens. I think the key is staying healthy. He can keep his back okay and his neck. I think he's got a great chance.
Okay, so what is the likelihood that Tiger Woods breaks Jack Nicklaus' record?
I think if he stays healthy, I think he's going to do it. I would bet on it if he stays healthy. I mean, how is he, 43?
Mm-hmm,
He can play, if he stays healthy with his back, the shape that he's in, he could play well into his early 50s, maybe 10 more years. That's 40 more majors. If he stays healthy, there's no way he's not going to win three or four more. And so I think the odds are very good. The big, big caveat is whether or not that back holds up.
Former PGA Tour player Larry Miller with us tonight, Inside the Ropes, SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. He's also an author. His latest release, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. Right now we're talking about Tiger Woods. So, Larry, give us your swing analysis of Tiger Woods. I mean, what have you seen different in Tiger's swing?
Well, it's gotten so much better than it was a year and a half ago. He's eliminated that big drop down at the start of the downswing.
Okay.
He's more level through the ball. His club face stays square all the way through the golf swing the way it did and when he was in his so-called prime back in, you know, the early 2000s. His swing was so efficient then that club just stayed square all the way through the golf swing. And he's back doing that same thing now. And it's really interesting because he hasn't had a coach for a while, and he's doing it on his own. And I think what he's done is I think he's just looked at the way he swung the club back then, and he's trying to work his way back to that, and he's done that. So, you know, why go to a coach right now the way he's playing? And he's got more knowledge about the golf swing than any golf coach. And so, you know, he's been able to put his swing back together the way it was. And his short game has come back. You remember he had those chipping problems and putting problems, but he's put that to rest, and he's back with a fantastic short game. Now he's starting to drive the ball well and straight. I think at Bethpage, he's got a tremendous chance to win that.
Okay, so let's shift gears here. Let's talk about the Byron Nelson, and we were just talking about Tiger, and someone that is trending perhaps in the opposite direction is Jordan Spieth, and a lot of questions about his game. What are the keys for him to bounce back? And because his last top 10 finish was in 2018, his world ranking right now is 39th.
Yeah, I think he's just got to, you know, he's just got to bounce off the bottom. You know, it's like somebody's got a drinking problem. You know, they got to bottom out before they can spring back if they do. And I think Spieth has been in such turmoil with his golf game that he's close to the bottom, and pretty soon he's going to bounce out of that. He's way too talented not to figure it out and come back. Plus, he's got a history of winning, so he knows he can win. He's got the self-belief. It's just that the technical aspect of his game right now is in disarray. But I think he'll put that together because he's so talented, and I expect him to come back. You know, I don't know. It might take a while yet. He may have a couple of flashes of it before the year's over, but I think maybe by next year, I think you're going to see Jordan Spieth being a factor again in the tournaments.
Who's your favorite for this weekend?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we just talked about how do you pick a favorite.
Right, you know, that's true. No pressure,
Larry. My favorite,
Larry,
is the guy who's going to make the most putts under 10 feet.
Okay, there you go. Hey, well, let's just move ahead. Let's talk about, as we've got just a few more minutes with Larry Miller tonight, SB Nation Radio. Let's look ahead at next week's PGA Championship. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, I guess they've already been up there. They're kind of scouting it out at Bethpage Black. Have you ever played that course, Larry?
I have not played the course, but a couple of friends of mine have played it, and I've got a pretty good, you know, and of course I watched the last couple of tournaments there, but that tournament is kind of unusual on the tour because it really narrows down the field of who can win that golf tournament. It's so long. By all accounts, the thing is a monster. it's extremely long. It's going to play very long because of the weather, and it really does eliminate a lot of people from contention. You're going to have to hit the ball really long on that golf course. And I'm not talking about 280 or 90. You're going to have to get it out there over 300 consistently to be able to score. And so that really eliminates a lot of the Zach Johnsons out there and, you know, and a lot of others who hit it 260 to 280. They're just not going to be able to score on that golf course. So, you know, look for the long hitters to be in the mix. Of course, now on the tour, there's tons of long hitters, but I can guarantee you it's going to be a guy who drives the ball really long that is going to win that golf tournament. And, of course, who putts well, you know, you might have 30 of them that hit it really long, but out of those 30, who's going to make the most putts? That's who's going to win. But it's not going to be a short hitter, I can guarantee you that.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin Larry Miller inside the ropes.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, what is the key to winning a PGA championship? But with the layout of this course, perhaps it will be a Dustin Johnson or a Brooks Koepka. I mean, they've got the long game.
Yeah, those two have to be right at the top of the list. McIlroy, you know, he's so shaky with the putter, you don't know. He's got the firepower for sure. And he's a great driver of the golf ball, but he just doesn't seem to make enough putts. When he does, he wins. And so it all comes down to him. You know, if he's going around in 28 or 9 putts every day, he's going to win the golf tournament. He's that great of a driver. But that's the big question mark with him. Ricky Fowler is a great putter.
Mm-hmm.
Is he long enough there? Yeah, probably so, but borderline. Justin Thomas would be a decent choice. But DJ and Koepka, you're right. Those two really have to be, you know, I think with the bookmakers, those two guys have to be right at the top as far as the favorites.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Inside the Ropes each and every week right here, SB Nation Radio. Larry Miller, always a true pleasure. Stay dry this weekend in Louisiana, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Absolutely. Bye. Much more coming your way. Hour 2, just around the corner, SB Nation Radio.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.